Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the films of 1999 from a bus of fire here in 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Nybart.
And I'm Felisco.
And with us is someone we both know because we've been on his podcast, but Jason Kleberg, first time on our podcast. Thank you for coming on, the host of the Force 5 podcast.
Thanks for having me. Honored to be here and talk Twin Dragons.
Well, I went on to your podcast. I did movies about twins, and neither of us had seen this one. And it happens to be a 99 American release. It was a 92 Hong Kong release.
Crazy.
Dimension snapped it up and put this out in the wake of, I guess this is 4 years beyond Rumble in the Bronx, but they would just take anything that Jackie Chan did. Because I remember they did Super Cop, I think, in 97, yep. Which was an early 90s movie. And then this, 99. They were just, you know, it took a little while to dub it because the dubs are so hilarious.
But, can I ask you a question about Rumble in the Bronx? Because like that, yes. That was, and again, I'm not a Jackie Chan aficionado, so I hope that you guys can wax more philosophical about him than I can. But I remember that being a big, that was a big movie. Am I crazy in that assessment that it was like his real coming out party in the States?
It was.
Okay.
Yes. Well, he tried to come into the States in the early 80s.
Okay.
And failed. Like he had the big brawl and then he had a small bit in Cannonball Run. And then he was in The Protector.
Okay.
Which just like was a miserable experience for him. Like he had his own cut. The director had his American cut.
Okay.
The director shit on him. Too over here, which was like a bad move. He said Jackie Chan would never be anything in the US essentially because we didn't understand his brand of comedy. And then so like he went back to Hong Kong, made Police Story, which was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And just built up 10 years of stuff over there and then finally Rumble in the Bronx. I think New Line put it out over here and it was a smash hit.
Yeah, it was Rumble in the Bronx, it was dubbed as well, correct?
Like just like this.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. the same style, the same over, you know, like over the top and
right.
You know, these kind of a little stilted Americanized jokes that work so beautifully when they're dubbed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was his first English speaking probably. Role.
It was probably Rush Hour in 98.
Probably Rush Hour.
Wow, that's kind of nuts. That in and of itself. Because like I thought he had been doing this a while when that movie came out. But I guess he had been. I just meant in terms of...
Well, he dubs himself. English. So he's always been able to speak English, which is interesting. Yep. But Rumble in the Bronx. Because I think Rumble in the Bronx, I remember seeing it in theaters, which is, I think, was it 95 or 96?
I think it was 96.
I'm just
looking, which is like right a now. Weird thing for me to even want to do as a 14-year-old who didn't particularly like martial arts films. But there was something about the way that movie looked. And being a New Yorker and knowing that they shot it not in New York, I think they shot it in Vancouver.
Rumble in Vancouver didn't sound as good.
No, and the artifice of the whole thing was really kind of intriguing to me. And then like,
so Rumble in the Bronx is 95, Rush Hour is 98, okay. And like,
and I know that yeah. Super Cop was released in 97 in America. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there is something about Jackie Chan. He is one of our like true magicians. Like we don't really have a lot of these Buster Keaton magicians, you know, in humanity. I mean that like, say I you know, being a dance writer, as you know, everyone knows, one of America's preeminent dance writers. I always talk about in our room, dance magic, which I think is the only thing that, look, I think Step Up, I think we did a great job. But yeah. I think we do a great job. I'm not besmirching the show, but I do think that the thing we have that no one else on TV has except for So You Think You Can Dance is amazing dancers and reasons to have them dance in the show. So we can provide our audience with dance magic every week. Jackie Chan, and when you go to a Jackie Chan movie, everyone I've ever seen, there's magic that happens that he is just doing. And my favorite part of a lot of Jackie Chan movies are the outtakes, because then you really understand like, wow, yeah. This really is like miraculous that he pulled this stuff off. So yes, I'm truly crazy about this guy. I think he's a gift to America.
I think he's a gift to the world. I think I do think that there's also something outside of his enormous physical abilities in terms of the action sequences that he does. He's also just a really charming person to watch. Like the dubbing in this is obviously part of its charm and it's hilariously, you know, bizarre.
Yeah.
But it could be a silent movie too. Like he could have been a silent actor. Like he's just got that, the charm.
Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin. Yeah, he's totally. He is the modern Buster and Keaton. Buster Keaton. I'm not the first one to say that by a long shot. Like it's very obvious that's who he's kind of modeled himself after. And it's just wonderful.
Jason, it always looks like he's having fun. He always looks like he's having fun.
Except when he plays John Ma.
there's
such a great line at the end of this movie where the villain, for those of you who haven't seen Twin Dragons, Jackie Chan plays long lost twin brothers. I don't think they ever actually established that they figure out that they're brothers, but he plays long lost twin brothers who wind up in the same place at the same time. And there's a lot of mistaken identity. And one of them is Jackie Chan and can, you know, fight. And the other one is a concert pianist and cannot. There's a great line at the end where the bad guy gets trapped and he goes, "Which one do I have? I hope it's not the fighter." It's so great. And then it very quickly he goes, "It is."
Yeah.
But yeah, Jason, it sounds like you go pretty deep on Jackie Chan.
Yeah, I'm a big, big Jackie Chan fan.
Yeah, I sensed that when you went like even deeper on our twin draft and drafted Double Trouble, which is even further into the you know, boondocks of twin-based direct-to-video, you know, human oddity movies. But
wait, is Double Dragon, that's the video game one?
Double Trouble.
Double Trouble,
which you should just Google real fast. And okay. You'll see the kind of lunatic we're dealing with.
Okay, cool.
But Jason, so tell me a little bit about your Jackie Chan history.
Oh, my God. Sorry, I saw the poster for Double Trouble.
Much like you, Kenny, I got into Jackie Chan when Rumble in the Bronx came out. And I wasn't into kung fu movies before then. But like they introduced a brand new style of kung fu and fighting moves. Cause I've always been an action fan. And so, you know, once you watch Rumble in the Bronx, then you want to go back and watch that other stuff. I think his opus is Police Story, which is one of the most exciting movies ever made. But I've gone back and watched all kinds of Jackie Chan stuff. It's fascinating. Now, I do have a question for you, Kenny, specifically watching this movie, because there are some very, very twin related questions that I need answered. first
he's
off,
our twin expert, obviously.
Yes, I don't have twins. Phil, you don't have twins. Kenny, you're the twin expert here. Have you ever walked into a room, had one of your twins walk in, and then had your other twin walk in seconds later and then have people faint?
Yes.
Because that happens 20 times in this movie.
Phil faints whenever my daughter walks
in. Whenever I see her. It's more to fear than anything else.
Scares the shit out of her. My twins are boy and girl, so we don't have a lot of those problems. But but no, that's never actually happened.
It does. I will say that so to piggyback on the twin questions, Kenny, have your twins ever been in separate locations and been able to puppet the movements of each other?
I wouldn't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
I don't think they would tell me. I think they would use their secret twin shining and not and communicate. Like, don't tell dad.
Because this does feel like twins are supernatural in this movie. Like there is something next level about being a twin.
Love it. Love that about this.
It works out for you, Kenny, because now you only have to pay for piano lessons for one twin. And then the other twin automatically knows how to do it.
Yeah, one takes piano, one takes, you know, kung fu, and then we're set.
Yeah. It's like, it's bizarre.
There's also something about the opening of this film. Where we open
so
in a,
good.
It's a good, black and
good
white
as movies get.
So it's so bizarre.
It is incredible. It's a black and white sequence in a hospital where twins are born, and then I can only gangland members attack the hospital essentially, and the twins are separated. One of them is taken in by a drunkard or a lush of some sort of an alcoholic woman.
I think she's also like very rich.
She's
a beautiful drunk woman who stumbles through parks in formal wear at night. Who adopts the baby probably illegally? Puts him in what looked
I
like
I think you
like
mean kidnaps.
Did you say kidnaps. Probably illegally? She literally
steals it.
She steals the baby. She buys him what looks like a Rolls Royce converted into a stroller.
Yes.
Fills it with baby booze. And also booze bottles. People come over and fawn over this child. Don't even care about the booze bottles. I think she might have been a famous actress. I think that was the idea.
Okay.
That she was like a famous,
interesting,
like falling actress who, you know, Mommy Dearest type situation maybe, but not so bad. Because she also seemed like a great mother. Like, he visits her grave after she died of cirrhosis, obviously.
There is something very pretty powerful. Young too.
There's yes. something very
picture
powerful
on
about
the grave is literally like the picture.
Seconds, it was seconds
of when
later.
We saw her. So yeah. she may have like took him in and died the next day. And that's like his parenthood.
Yeah, isn't that ironic?
The shot of the baby in the stroller surrounded by bottles of booze is so something good. I've never seen before. Like, I've never seen, like, that's a bold image.
I want to talk about that for half a second.
Sure.
There's a reason you've never seen it before. Because in almost any movie, I'm thinking, like, who would do that? Like, would Rob Schneider do it? And the answer is, like, maybe. Would it play? I think the answer is no.
Correct.
And I think that's part of what's so fucking great about this guy is like anything goes with this guy.
Yeah.
Anything. It's
also
awesome.
Like, it's so weirdly heartfelt. Like, that's the thing about it where like, it doesn't, as much as like, there's a reason why we don't want to see that image because we're just like that baby you know, we don't want babies around booze. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a dissonant issue. Yes. You know what I mean? We don't want those two things together. At the same time, you're kind of taken with the whole situation, and it's all shot and executed in such a loving, kind of like playful way that it doesn't feel weird.
Let me throw something at you, Phil.
Yeah.
You know who could have done it and could have gotten away with it is Tom Green. But part of the reason Tom Green gets away with it is because it's almost the opposite of Jackie Chan, where he's like, this is all fake. Like, don't get emotionally invested because this is fake. Whereas Jackie Chan does the other thing, which is like, this is like
real.
Like, I know, like everything you see here is crazy, but like, this is real. This is about love. This is about friendship. This is about loyalty. This is like it's the I don't know. It's impossible to explain what he does. And it's like, 95-99% of artists in working in film or any, you know, kind of film medium are just people who are really fucking smart, who work really fucking hard and learn everything. And then 1% are these fucking unicorns. These, you know, like we talk about Lynch a lot, who's like that. Jackie Chan is also like that. Yep. Just like, it works.
Well, don't try to replicate it. He's an auteur. It
works. Yeah, he directed Police Story. Yeah. He works. It just, he's a... It's crazy and wonderful, and he's the best.
It is. It really is kind of, you know, I haven't watched a Jackie Chan movie in a very, very long time. I have not seen the Rush Hour films in their entirety.
Ever? You
know, I mean, as I've said before, worked in a video store. It was definitely put on in the store on many occasions. So I've like seen it, but haven't
I've watched the first two recently.
Okay.
The first two are great.
They're just great. Like, and their chemistry is fantastic and the action's amazing. And it's just, again, these movies just work. They work despite Brett Ratner.
There's just something, you know, watching this film the other day, I was just sort of, first of all, you said this before we got on mic, Kenny, but, you know, we're in a real pocket of strange movies right now. And this was just like so lively and fun and just, you know what I mean? Like, it's clear as day that Jackie Chan's modus operandi is, I want to give people a good time. I just want them to have a good time at the movies. And everything else is secondary, as far as I'm concerned. And very few people approach film that way. You know what I mean? I think that a lot of the filmmakers, most of the filmmakers, it seems nowadays, are either trapped in these franchises where all that matters is the bottom dollar, or they're auteurs and they want to make things that make people think, neither of which are bad. But I just think there's a freshness and a vitality to the way that Jackie Chan approaches these films that you're just sort of, you can't help but fall for. I mean, it's really incredible.
The only other guy, and it's a weird comparison, but I made the comparison when I was writing in my notes on this, is Sacha Baron Cohen is the only other guy who has this like superpower, but the superpower exists to make you love your experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so happy watching almost anything he does, because I do think he is like, you know, talented in a way that no one else is and does the thing no one else even considered. He does it so incredibly well.
I also, it should be said too, you know, the other day I watched Jackass Forever on Paramount Plus. And I do think that there is this corollary between Jackie Chan and Sacha Baron Cohen and the Jackass guys, where they're willing to do anything to their bodies for the joke, for the entertainment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think about, I can only assume the amount of injuries that Jackie Chan has taken in his career. You know, it's obviously, you know, the Jackass guys are not, I don't know. That's a whole other conversation, but that's a whole thing. And watching that, you're just sort of in awe at what they're willing to do to make their friends laugh is pretty unbelievable. But Sacha Baron Cohen's the same thing. I mean, with Sacha Baron Cohen, there's also this like palpable kind of danger to his situations, because, you know, he puts himself into real, you know, obviously dangerous situations. Jackie Chan, though, you never really feel like he's in danger which is why I think it's also so much fun to watch, because you're just like, this guy can do anything.
Well, I'd argue in this film, it doesn't feel like he's in any real danger. But if you go back and watch some stuff like the police story movies, Crime Story, those kind of movies, it is definitely apparent that man was almost killed on multiple occasions. I mean, in Police Story, there's a scene where he uses an umbrella to catch a bus and drags on the back of the bus with the umbrella. And I'm pretty sure he bought that umbrella from like a store down the street and then just said, let's do this. I mean, it looks harrowing. Even you watch it now, it's like, Jesus Christ, how is this man still alive here in 2022?
That's awesome. I want to give just a little bit of context for people who haven't seen Twin Dragons. Jackie Chan plays twins separated at birth, Boomer and John Ma. The two have grown up to lead very different lives, whereas John Ma was brought up by his natural parents, has become a world-famous pianist. Boomer grew up on the streets, eventually becoming a somewhat shady auto racer. Auto racer. Sure.
He's like a mechanic.
Twin Dragons was released in China in 1982, but in the United States, it came out on April 9th, 1989, against The Matrix, Never Been Kissed, 10 Things I Hate About You, and Go. It would go on to make $46 million worldwide, which is pretty, I mean, on a budget that probably was pretty minuscule, I imagine. The Austin Chronicle gave the film a...
Those are some pretty good special effects.
The Austin Chronicle
gave the film
a positive review, 3.5 out of 5 stars, noting that the film is only for those who are fully on the bus with Jackie's approach and who would let a little bad English dubbing get in the way of their movie enjoyment. AV Club also gave it a positive review. Variety noted that the camera trickery is glaringly cheesy in some shots, undercutting the illusion of twin brothers in the same frame. When the two brothers meet in a hotel lavatory, it's easy to see how the two shots have been overlapped. Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, I don't think that this is like high art, but I also don't necessarily, I didn't feel taken out of it. Did you guys feel like I bought the illusion?
Well, I think when you watch any twin movie, any twin movie, you have to think about like the scale of the twin effects. On one side, on the really great side, I think you have like the Winklevoss twins from Social Network.
Sure.
And then on the other side, you have like Stavros, Uncle Jesse's evil cousin on Full House. So that's like, that's my twin range. You have Winklevi to Stavros. Like, where do you think it falls in there?
Yeah, I think it's closer to Stavros than it is to the Winklevi. Yeah, I mean, I do think though that, and again, it's sort of the manic energy that this exists on, right? Where it's just like, it doesn't really stop to catch its breath either. It's a short movie. Feels like it's like right at 90 minutes. I think they cut out like 15 minutes of backstory for the American release. But still, like, it doesn't really stop to catch its breath. And because of that manic energy, I'm not paying much attention to these things that they're talking about in terms of like how believable the twins are. So I just want to talk for a second about the first fight scene in the club.
So good.
Which actually made me think a little bit of Temple of Doom. Which, I mean, obviously very different films, but like had that same sort of energy to it. Maggie Cheung, who, I mean, just stunning. Maggie Cheung in Wong Kar-wai's films is just like...
The way she ping-pongs between those two people is crazy. So fucking great.
Yeah.
It's like how Buscemi goes between the Coens and Adam Sandler, you know?
Right.
The two auteurs.
Right. Sure. I appreciate I love the blue wig in the beginning. She just brings this sort of, I mean, I hate to say it, but like a groundedness, I guess, sort of to it. Like, I feel like when she's in those scenes, she feels like a three-dimensional character. I don't know. There's something about Maggie Cheung's energy that I just think is really pretty, is pretty stunning. But
I like the other female lead too.
Me too. I was going to say the same thing. Who played Tammy? Yeah. I think my sense is it's not easy to play the other female lead when Maggie Cheung is the, you know, the first one, I think they both, I mean, I think the other one did a great job. Obviously Maggie Cheung did a great job. Like, she's amazing. She's awesome.
She is.
Awesome.
Oh, go ahead, please go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's weird because in the movie, only Jackie Chan Maggie Chung and the third actor, the small guy, whose his name friend. Is escaping me. Yeah,
Tarzan,
Tyson.
Tyson. What's, yeah, Tyson.
The classic Chinese name, Tyson.
With Boomer, of course. Those three are the only ones that are like billed, and then it goes to like in alphabetical order or whatever. And I was very disappointed because I thought that the actress named Nana Li Chi, that's Jet Li's wife, was fantastic in this. And I was disappointed that she didn't even get billed.
I don't want to jump to the end first, but it out of order. But it's worth noting now because we're talking about Maggie and forgive me, Nina, is that who?
Nina Li Chi?
Yeah.
Nina Li Chi.
The last line of this movie is a real doozy.
Yeah.
Because they're about to get married. And it's basically a twins joke where they're just like, well, which one is it? And then they go, does it matter? And then it's Chris. And you're just like,
it's so strange.
What?
So strange.
I think it matters.
Yeah.
It's a very strange joke to end the movie on.
That's the play to being a twin. Doesn't matter.
Well, that whole last scene is bizarre because the parents are there and they're like, now do we get to meet this person that looks kind of like our kid?
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then, of course, they faint.
So did they not know they had twins? I'm unclear as to...
No, they knew. They definitely were devastated.
Knew. Yeah, he was on the Pan Am flight just like falling his eyes out. Yeah, he watched his kid fall out the window.
Yeah,
in the arms of a bad guy, and then watch the inspector tie. He did the old tie the bed sheet to a pole and slide down it. That's when you know you're watching a live action Looney Tunes film, like right in the beginning.
Oh, it's so good! I can't believe this exists in real life. I just can't believe this one exists. This is the most unhinged Jackie Chan film I've seen.
There's some reasons.
Yeah, the two Jackie Chans, the Jackie Chan who can't fight but can only fight when the other one is puppeteering him. That's really wonderful. The black and white beginning is incredible. I think like the set pieces are classic Jackie Chan, but so funny. Like there's such a great little scene where they're not little. I mean, it's a massive set piece where they're on speedboats.
Yeah, the boat chase is great. Yeah,
and Tyson is trying to like knock the other guy with a giant fishing net and catches a fish.
So funny.
I just like, how do they have the time for this stuff? Like,
it's tremendous. And then there's also just like the concert stuff is real fun. Where he's, you know what I mean? Like there's just good jokes. There's just like the song's a hit. Like I don't know. I think there's something really great about all the action's fantastic, but it's just a really lovely movie. Like it's a really sort of just super playful, doesn't try to like, I don't know. I don't think it's trying to reinvent the wheel here. I think it's just trying to have a good time.
Yet it kind of is. Like, but I'm not saying it's trying, but it kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the penicillin vaccine. You woke up, oh my God, new wheel.
This movie, that's the pull quote of this episode, Kenny. This movie's the equivalent of the penicillin vaccine.
Yes,
that's a unique take on this.
I think because they're like, there's so much style to this film. Like, you know what I love? I love that there is just a coterie of bad guys who wear suits and sunglasses all the time. It's so, and there's so many of them. They're like, it's like Mr. Smith. It's so awesome. I love that. I think one of the secret like best scenes in the movie is the fight at the mall where this random guy in a suit is just selling sporting goods out of a kiosk by the escalator. and he takes a punch early in the scene, and the way he takes the punch is so funny. He's like, I can't believe you punched me in the face. They knock over the ping pong balls. And he's like, my balls. But like, but it's not like a ball joke. It's more like, these are expensive.
Yep.
I'm 99%
sure.
Buster Keaton moment, like the guy's reaching back for each weapon he sees, and the owner is taking it before he can grab it. It's amazing. That seems great.
And they also, I mean, that the guy, they call him Rocky, Tammy's boyfriend, who's,
yep.
a, I don't know what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be
like a biker.
Asian
Mad
Max.
Yeah, he looks like a biker. Like, yeah, yeah.
Like he does look like he's from Mad Max. He's awesome too, because he just starts punching air. He's like, he's just punching air. Like Jackie Chan, like, stops for a second. He's like, got to punch it forward. It's like, I love that by this film. In Hong Kong, Jackie Chan is so established as the ass kicker of all ass kickers, who also does it effortlessly, mm-hmm. that there's no one man who can beat him. And if you take a guy like this guy Rocky and have him try to like hurt him, he's just gonna look silly. I think that's really, it's really wonderful. It's just a wonderful, like, little, like, lo-fi bit. This is all that they're using here is a platform, some sporting goods, and a mannequin in a catcher's uniform that I'm 99% sure they put a man in when he falls. But I went back a few times to see if they had a man, because he fell like a man would fall. But I'm not, I don't know, I'm not sure. There's a moment where the catcher's hand hits Jackie's butt. It's like, you know, again, this is like some stuff that like Rob Schneider might do and I might roll my eyes. But when Jackie does, I'm like, ah, high comedy.
Do you, where does this rank for you guys on Jackie Chan? Like in his oeuvre?
In terms of action comedy stuff, I'd probably put it in the middle tier of his movies. Okay. It's not as bad as like his, it's better than his later 2000s yeah. stuff, like The Medallion and,
yeah, the Medallion's really not good.
Yeah, I think it was in like Accidental yeah. Spy, that stuff. But it's not as good as stuff like Rumble in the Bronx, Police Story, Super Cop for me.
I think, you know, Rumble in the Bronx holds like a special place in my heart. I remember watching it in the theater distinctly and not knowing what to expect and just thinking it was the most wonderful, fun, hilarious experience possible. And I think Super Cop is half stepped down from that. I think Police Story is not that funny, but really wonderful and incredible. I think his American language, English language, American films after Rush Hour are not great. But
you're not a fan of what is it? Shanghai
the Night series are yeah, the Shanghai Nights. That series is pretty fun with Owen Wilson. Fun.
The Tuxedo. They're just not great stuff, but it's not terrible. Again, he's at this point he's in mid 50s doing this shit, and it's its own level of thrill. I think this is one of the better ones. I think this is like if you watch this movie and you don't enjoy yourself, check your pulse, buddy.
Yeah, I went into this, I mean, with all due respect, went into it with pretty low expectations, not knowing much about Jackie Chan, not having seen a lot of his films, but also just sort of being like, you know, he's playing twins. I mean, what exactly is this? And I was truly won over 5 minutes into this thing, if that. Like, just this movie opens, as we've said, with this black and white sequence that's so gonzo. Like, I was just like, if you're not won over, you're either in or you're out in a big way, right? Like, this thing is, it's really kind of setting its modus operandi pretty quickly and out of the gate. So, you know, Katie and I have talked a lot about intent of filmmakers. We've talked a lot about, you know, vision and you know, just a real sense of knowing what you want to do with the movie. And this movie knows what it is and what it wants to be from the jump. And you know, you're either in for the ride or you're not. And if you are, you're going to have a great time. Like it's just it is an undeniably silly movie, but lovely. Yeah.
I'll also say that if you're a fan of Hong Kong movies, you'll also get a kick out of the cameos in this movie. So this was, you'll notice like as the credits start rolling, it says it's a Directors Guild presentation. And this movie was actually made by Jackie Chan and the Directors Guild as like a fundraiser for their Directors Guild. So anybody that's not in Jackie Chan's stunt team in this movie is a Hong Kong director.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many cameos in here. I don't know if you noticed, but at the end in the wedding scene, you can see in the back for like 3 seconds, John Woo is the priest.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's there. Yeah.
John Woo's sitting there. Andrew Lau has like the smallest cameo in the very beginning. They show Jackie Chan's or John Ma's first birthday party, It's maybe like 3 seconds of screen time. And Andrew Lau, director of like the Infernal Affairs series, is sitting back there. It's incredible. Like so did many Wu cameos.
And, did Jackie Chan and Zhang Wu ever work together?
No, they've never worked together. There's a lot of like parallels, but he never worked with them.
Tonally, they're quite different. I mean, John Woo's stuff is so, you know, straight and heavy, and I don't necessarily know that Jackie Chan fits into that necessarily as much. But
yeah, just so many good cameos.
Yeah, it's a really stacked movie of really talented people. I also think like the set pieces. You know, Kenny mentioned the boat chase, which is great, but then you've got this crazy magnet crane situation at the end.
Yeah, with Tyson strapped to it with like he's got a metal girder backpack essentially on. And he's stuck to this crane Jackie climbs it.
It feels, this is the other thing too, it all feels practical. Like,
yes.
Clearly, that's a crane with a magnet, and he's got this fucking thing strapped to him.
I believe that happened.
I do too.
Yeah, I believe this is...
Well, that's only where the scene starts, because then it moves to a Mitsubishi, like...
car crash test dummy
site, which is, I mean, Jackie Chan has Mitsubishi like a sponsorship with them, so you'll see in Jackie Chan movies a ton of Mitsubishi stuff. But yeah, it's incredible. And those three guys that are playing poker when they walk into that crash test facility, two directors of the film and the producer, sitting there trying to one up each other. It's amazing. Awesome.
He has this uncanny ability of finding sets in locations that have never been used as action sets. But when you're there, you feel like this just makes perfect sense. This is like he sees sets and locations in a way that I think most people wouldn't even consider. I bet doing a location scout with him is like watching fucking Michelangelo paint the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah,
totally. It's just one of those. I mean, I it's a very slow level thing, but my father-in-law is a restaurateur and owns restaurants. And going to a restaurant with him is a mind-expanding experience because he sees things that you never would see. He sees things from the menus to the waiters to the lighting to the service that you would just never even consider when you think about what it means to, you know, go to a restaurant and get good service. And this is true. This is true from Chipotle to, you know, the nicest restaurants in the world. So I think that there is like that thing probably with Jackie Chan where you're just like, yeah, it was right in front of my eyes this whole time. But like you saw it and you know how to use it. I bet it's just such a fucking joy working with him.
Oh, 100%. I also think that, you know, North American audiences, I think, have such a binary perspective on, I'm just going to say, martial arts movies, by and large. I think that, you know...
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I think that The Matrix and Crouching Tiger changed that. I think Wu Ping, just in terms of how... I think it kind of broke open American sensibilities in terms of what this genre was capable of. And that it was just able to be something... I think that there was something disposable about it for American audiences. up until a certain point. And I think that's unfortunate. I think that it bums me out to think that there are people that watch a movie like this, for instance, and don't acknowledge or understand how hard it is to execute something like this, just because it looks perhaps goofy or whatever the case might be, or seems silly in some way. It's very, very, very hard to do this. And I understand that, you know, and I love Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I think it's a masterful movie. And I understand why North American audiences watch that and were so swept up in its beauty and in just sort of all the things that it was trying to say culturally and otherwise. But this movie is also doing something incredibly difficult. And I just don't know that people give this kind of martial arts movie the credit that it deserves.
Yeah, I agree. It's all about how those movies were marketed to our public, right, too. I mean, when the Kung Fu craze started in the 70s, they weren't at every movie theater. It was right. The grindhouse theaters, 42nd Street, college campuses, and art house theaters. And like right. That's how it remained until Rumble in the Bronx came out.
That's really interesting because like it does feel like, you know, the Kung Fu craze, to some degree, you know, blaxploitation films, all that kind of stuff felt like it was all kind of put into a box. And it's fascinating how long it took for it to be taken seriously. You know, obviously we've talked a lot about The Matrix on this podcast, but, you know, that film obviously took so many influences and kind of jammed them all together so beautifully and perfectly that I think it really was a mind expanding situation where people were just like, wait, so Kung Fu can exist in this cyberpunky universe? Like it was such a game changer.
Well, that and also Quentin. I mean, just
right. Yes, yes, yes.
And then, and I would also give a little credit to Wu-Tang as well. I think that in the 90s, there were just a few of these really, really influential people who kind of said, who particularly when it comes to Kung Fu films, mm-hmm. that put it at the forefront of what they were doing. And I think that it was those two. And The Matrix mattered for this massively as well.
Didn't Wu Ping do the fight choreography on this as well?
I believe so.
Yeah. So he had two.
I think it's so interesting that, not to keep harping on Crouching Tiger, but I think it's so interesting that Aang basically was like, I want them to be flying, right? Like, I want them to be essentially dancing in the air. And Wu Ping was like, that will never fucking work. No one's gonna buy this. And you gotta imagine when Wu Ping tells you, this isn't a good idea, or like the audience isn't going to buy it, you got to take a real second to wonder whether, because like this is a guy who obviously has been pushing the boundaries of believability for a really long time and suspense of disbelief. But obviously, you know, Aang was right, but it is interesting how kind of what Wu Ping's rules are, where his box is. I think has got to be pretty interesting. He's got, I mean, I can't even imagine what his, I mean, he must have, you know, 70, 80 credits to his name, if not more. Like the sheer amount of films that he's done is pretty incredible. You mentioned the car testing facility at the end. So that whole sequence, I don't know what exactly was going on inside that room with all the red lighting and the what have you. Was it
it's heat testing for the cars to testing. See how much heat they can take. Yeah.
It was a fucking great sequence. It looks so fucking cool.
Yeah, well, it's great because they have like the heat room that connects to the rain room. And you have both Jackies alternating between the rooms and then two bad guys who don't know which Jackie Chan they're up against at any given time, which is hilarious because you have one scene where like the two, you have John Ma and then you have the bad guy and they're both trying to get away from one another. Yep, and it's so funny.
This is also one of those things too. And Kenny, obviously you guys did your twins, top five twins movies. But there is just something so clean about a twin movie too. You know what I mean? Of just the mistaken identity thing has obviously been done since silent cinema. It's been, you know, I mean, we've been doing this for you know, a very, very long time.
Forever, yeah.
Right? And it just fucking works, man. Like, it still works. We haven't really had one in a while, it seems, but, like, it works.
Yeah.
It's easy. It works. It's fun. I think that, I mean, and they use it well here. The best application of it was the magnet scene when they actually used it to solve the problem. I thought that was really smart and exciting. When you kind of realize what they're doing, you're like, oh, they outsmarted these guys. All right, pretty clever.
But, there's gonna be what? Yeah, go ahead, please, Jason.
Oh, I was going to say there's going to be obvious links to this movie and Double Impact with Van Damme, which had come out 91. This one came out 92. So a lot of people would argue that, like, this is Jackie Chan's riff on Double Impact. But if you've ever seen the twin movie, have either of you seen the twin movie Big Business with Bette Midler?
Lily Tomlin and Bette Midler?
Yeah, Lily Tomlin, Bette Midler.
The twin movie Big Business.
It's a weird movie. I saw it as a very young child, so I can't speak
to it. It's got a lot of similarities to Big Business as well. So people would say this is ripping off Double Impact. It's also kind of riffing on Big Business, which was an adaptation of Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors. So this could be Jackie Chan's attempt at some Shakespeare right here.
That's incredible.
Oh, I was, the Prince of the Pauper was what I was thinking of when you said it's gone back a long time, because yes, it's gone back a long time. I guess Comedy of Errors is even further back, yeah.
In Big Business, they have like the class thing, the rich one and the poor one.
Right.
The twins meet in the bathroom. Like, there's a lot of similarities between the two movies. It's interesting.
I will say this doesn't really, and I don't mean this in a judgmental way or a negative way, but like it's not really a class movie. I didn't feel so much. Did you feel that? Did you feel like it really didn't have much commentary on like the caste system? Not that I would expect much from it, but like it is interesting because it is there a little bit.
You see it like when Boomer goes, or when John takes Tammy into the recital hall, and she's just like amazed that he has this great hotel room, that he's in this hall and stuff like that. And in the original version, she then in that scene has like a daydream of her becoming this big pop star,
which
is something that is out of her range as like this karaoke singer at the time. But we obviously don't get that in the Harvey Scissorhands version that we probably saw.
You know, I will say the first scene, or the scene where she thinks they're going to have sex, but instead he gives her just an intense massage and she falls asleep.
So funny.
Is pretty fantastic. It's great physical humor. She's really funny in that scene. There's really good stuff in this. I really also just, I don't know. I was just charmed by it. I don't know what else to say other than it's a really charming movie. I did want to ask you, Kenny, as we know, you have twins. Do your twins do they like watching movies about twins, or do they have a favorite twins movie?
Layla loves Parent Trap.
It's
definitely one of her in rotation type movies.
Okay.
Rollins, I think he thinks twin movies are beneath him, probably. We did watch half an hour of The Shining last night.
Oh.
Which Jason would know is not a kid's twin movie. Yeah. Well, yeah, he's constant. Oh, hold.
Okay.
I got to go. For one sec. Sorry.
Okay. All right.
Put a thing in. Put a
marker on this. Will, are you there? Is anyone there? Any of our producers? No one seems to be there. Okay. I'm just going to text him. Sorry about this.
Jason. All good. All good. As you know, I'm used to this too. I have trains that go by every hour, so...
Hey, hey, hey.
Did you watch the version of this on Tubi?
I did.
Sorry, I'm the only person in this house, so
everything okay?
Oh yeah, I just have to open the door.
Okay.
So we watched.
Rollins thinks you watched The Shining.
We watched The Shining last night, and you know, which has twins in it, so that's why I bring it up. And we lasted half an hour, and then I reminded him that we are going to a hotel in the mountains on Sunday, and maybe we shouldn't do this. And he's like. You're right, Dad. I don't think we should do this. So, yeah. the reason I watched The Shining, Phil, is because we're doing the screen drafts on hotels, and I'm trying to get a jump on it. And also, you know, he thinks he's very tough and wants to watch all the scariest movies. And as a great dad, I just let him. So,
you know, that's a really scary movie, dude. For a 9-year old.
It's scary for a 40-year-old.
I know. I told my dad we were watching it, and he goes, ooh, that's scary. And then a second later, he goes, you know, I've never actually seen it. I've always been too afraid to watch it. My 7-year-old father. So, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I also started watching The Shining a few weeks ago before we even decided to do the screen drafts thing. But just because I was like, I haven't seen The Shining in a very, very long time. It's unnerving from the fucking first second. The score and the eerie chopper shot.
Yes,
you're just like, well, I don't like this. I don't like being a part of this.
I mean, I love it. I love it.
I find
horror movies comforting for whatever reason.
Really?
Yeah, I find them calming. I mean, my kids make fun of me because when I can't go to bed, I listen to like murder podcasts. And they put me down, and I don't know why, but I don't know what it is, but I particularly horror movies I've seen already, like The Shining, for whatever reason, like as soon as you start with those, you know, helicopter shots and they get to the overlook and that first scene with Jack walking in, I'm calm. I'm at ease. I feel like I'm home. I can't explain it. I love that movie. I love everything about it.
It's a great movie. I'm certainly not saying otherwise.
I know, of course.
But there's something very unnerving about it. There's also something too about the 80s of it. I don't know what it is, but I find that sometimes 80s stuff can seem very unsettling. 80s horror movies, I guess, maybe like The Exorcist, is one of those 70s. Films. Is that 70s?
73. Yeah,
it's, I think what you're talking about is the 70s, the way movies are shot, the way movies are shot and lit in the 70s.
And I guess The Shining is 80, right? 80. Like it's basically the 70s.
I am unnerved by, almost every movie from the early 80s that has depictions of children because they are dressed so disgustingly and their hair looks horrible. But I've gotten over it. I've gotten over it. Like now, you know, and now I find it kind of, you know, charming. Like I
just find dated. This is such a weird thing. But it sort of, I guess it taps into some of my neuroses, but like dated medical stuff freaks me out.
Yeah, you mentioned that before.
The Exorcist.
The Nick is not for you.
When she's being tested in the hospital, because they're just like, what the fuck's going on with this girl? And it's just these old, ancient medical equipment. I'm just like, no. I cannot be a party to this.
I watched a movie called, I can't remember, it was a Michael Crichton movie about...
Andromeda Strain?
No. It was it's called Coma.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's a Robin Cook book, but yeah.
Yeah. Did Crichton
Coma's not Crichton. Yeah. But Crichton might have directed it. Yeah, you're right.
I think he might have directed it.
The first one, the Michael Douglas one, yeah.
But yes, and Coma's is essentially all outdated medical shit. And
it's terrifying.
It is very, very unsettling. The idea of getting like very sick pre-1980 is horrifying.
Yes. That's the way
If you want to watch like a really fucked up, weird medical movie about twins, Dead Ringers.
Oh, sure. That's OG twins shit. Yeah, that movie, you've seen Dead Ringers, right, Kenny?
I have. Crichton wrote the screenplay for
that. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Let's see if he directed it.
I think he might have.
He did. Directed and wrote the screenplay. Yes.
That was around the time of like Westworld when he was like trying to get into the directing game.
Yes.
But yeah, no, Dead Ringers is one of those films where it's just deeply unsettling. There's also, so my mom used to be friends with his wife, Denise, years and years and years ago. And she went over to their house once, and Cronenberg had designed the gynecological tools himself and just had them on display around his house. And we're just like, yeah, that tracks. That makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, that movie doesn't feel like any of that stuff ever really happens to real people. It's so at least there's
just like the red surgical outfits.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really incredible shit.
It's yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's something, was that on your Twins draft? Did that make the Twins draft?
I, you know, it was not to give it away. Can I give it away, Jason?
Okay.
We talked about it. I won't give it away. Listen to the episode. Was mentioned.
Yeah, obviously listen to the episode. I Twins movies, that's a really interesting, that's a good top five. Truthfully, that's also a good screen draft.
Yeah.
You could do a good Twins screen draft.
Yeah.
Kenny obviously would put Jack and Jill at the top.
But I think we did the job. I think we did the job. At this point, I think it's redundant. But and I absolutely would put Jack and Jill on it.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ! So yeah, do we want to rate this? Do we have any more thoughts that you guys?
Yeah, let's rate it.
Okay, I mean, I'd never seen this film before, I went into this cold. I actually came into this podcast not as high as you guys on it. I really enjoyed it, but I was at like a 60. I think that I was like, this is a good movie. This was fun, and I'm glad we did it. This conversation has definitely made me like it even more. I'm at a 75 now. I think that it's, you know, I don't even want to say this because it sounds shitty, but like, I don't think you should rate a movie like this on a curve necessarily, but I do think that it kind of exists in its own lane and it needs to be kind of graded on its own rules, if you know what I'm saying. And I think that like, to kind of clump this in with really anything we've done in 99 so far almost does it a disservice. But yeah, I'm at a 75. What about you, Kenny?
I was at a 72 before this. I don't know why I was so low. That doesn't feel right to me, but I'm not going to go super high. I mean, this isn't like a masterpiece, but it's a great time at the movies. So I'm going to go to 75. I think 75 is a good number for it. It's a great time at the movies.
Yes. One more can you ask?
What would you do?
What about Jason?
I'm a little higher on it than you guys. I go with 80. And
okay. I hear you.
I have to ask too, considering you've seen just about everything that's come out in 1999, would you say that this is the second best action movie of 1999?
Well, shit, we better go to the wiki.
I mean, what's it going to compete with? Chill Factor?
So are you, Jason, are you saying that The Matrix is the first or something else?
Matrix, of course, yeah.
What other, I mean, now I'm drawing a total blank on the action films we've covered in 99. Are there, I mean,
well, 99's been it was a weak movie for action. Like you mentioned that it's a weak year for horror movies before. It's also a very weak action movie year. So what does it compete with? Chill Factor?
No.
Universal Soldier 2 or whatever.
All right, let's get into it.
Get into it, Kenny. What are we looking at?
All right, so let's see. What could be considered an action? Okay, so we're saying The Matrix is action, which, you know, it is. It's obviously number one. The next action movie.
I mean, the only one that comes to mind, just for what it's worth, because you mentioned horror and action, End of Days is a good action movie.
That's the one. That's the one that comes to mind for me. That's the one that jumps to the front of mind.
Yeah, but the only other one I could see arguing for is like Three Kings, but
it's not
really
an action movie.
Yeah, just and then like I would say, I worked at a video store. That's a war movie.
And I would say another movie that like, you know, like Matrix is Matrix action, I guess, but Matrix to me is sci-fi, right? Like the primary genre.
Like 13th Warrior is an action. It got some good action in it.
but it's much worse than this.
Yes,
but the primary genre for Matrix is sci-fi. The other one that I think might fall into it, but I feel like there's a different primary. The primary genre for Three Kings is obviously a war movie.
War movie. Yeah.
The primary genre for End of Days, I guess,
it's kind of action, horror,
but it's kind of horror. I kind of feel the same way as you. So, like,
yeah,
as far as like straight action movies, but
there's just very few of them. I mean, truly,
the one I was going to say that I think would fall into this category, though it's more adventure, is The Mummy. But The Mummy, right, as everyone knows, is not for me. Blue Streak is kind of an action movie.
Kind of. In like a comedy. Beverly Hills Cop sort of way.
Yeah, it's not better than this one.
Well, no. I mean, this is the best straight action movie of the year.
It's so funny. I mean, Wild Wild West doesn't really fall into that. It's also not a good movie. But
this is crazy.
Isn't this crazy?
There's no action movie this year. The World is not enough as an action movie, but fuck it.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny because I feel like you've really hit something, Jason. We are, you know, 4.5 years into this podcast, and I can't believe that Kenny and I haven't realized how bad an action year it is.
Payback is an action movie, but no.
Not great.
Hard pass on that.
Yeah.
Dude, this is the year that forgot how to make an action movie. And that I would say that's part of the reason maybe that this is such an interesting year.
Yeah.
Because the thing that generally dominated the box office for most of the 90s is largely absent this year.
Yeah, it is really strange. I'm looking as well, and I'm just like, did we really have no action movies?
Virus is kind of an action movie.
Yeah, Virus is an action. It's not good, but it's an action.
Simon says straight action movie.
That is good flick.
Not as good as Twin Dragons, but good flick.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, is there anything that's sort of overtly like this? I really don't.
Yeah,
think
Simon.
There
Simon
is.
Says, "Oh, Boondock Saints is an action movie."
Yeah.
Terrible.
The Corruptor, Phil, bad action movie.
Yeah, Corruptor. I'd say Corruptor's an action film. Mod Squad? Yeah.
Maybe.
Also not good.
It did kind of reskin itself as an action movie, I would say. Would you say Instinct's an action movie, Phil?
Oh, fuck no. I mean, I think Virus is, though.
You know what might be an action movie?
Mm.
Well, all right. Entrapment, definitely an action movie.
That's an action movie.
Is Thomas Bad. Crown an action movie?
No, it's not. And I'm not going to ride for that. I mean, not in that oeuvre.
This is in...
General's Daughter?
No, no. We're not actually in that. This
Drama.
Is indubitably the best straight
Omega
action
coat?
Movie we've done.
You. This is wow. Outside of the Matrix, I think, just scanning our list here... I mean, Bats obviously is kind of an action movie, but it's more of a horror movie.
Yeah, but more of a horror movie.
Yeah.
More of a creature feature. We've done some great creature features.
Creature feature is a great
Deep Blue
term.
Sea and Lake Placid. Those are great creature features. And IMDb might throw action like third or fourth in their genre thing, but they're not action. I mean, Lake Placid is a great fucking movie, but it's not an action movie, it's a creature feature.
Yeah.
Those are different things.
No, it's
when DeLandre came on and like ran down what a creature feature is, it was very clear to me that like they are structured differently from your classic action movie. There's no Lethal Weapon this year.
Yeah.
There's no Die Hard this year. There is no Michael Bay movie this year. You know, the McTiernan weirdly has two movies, neither of which are like classic action movies. You know, there's no, is there a Donner movie here? Not really.
No.
Like
no.
There's, no, the action guys.
Yeah.
There's no Bruckheimer movie this year. The action guys took a break.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because it does feel like So Pearl Harbor's 2001, right? That's the next Michael Bay movie. And then he's in Transformers World, and those movies are obviously straight up action films.
Yeah.
I got to say, very excited for Ambulance. Can't tell you, you know, I'm not a Michael Bay guy, as Kenny can attest. But
I literally cannot wait.
I'm just
it is
I'm
the
so
only
excited.
Movie I care about.
it's the thing about it, outside of the fact that, like, you know, I'm just excited to go to the movies, but
yeah,
it's such a clean premise. So clean. Like, that's the thing about Michael Bay that I've really not liked for a long time now, is that he's just been so lost in a bunch of, like, nonsense scripts and just, like, this is just a bunch of guys on a getaway. It's an ambulance, some crazy drone photography. Excellent, it's going to look great in fucking IMAX.
Actors.
Yeah, great actors.
It's going to
yeah.
look great. Like, there's yeah. that movie that I'm always kind of on the lookout for something Michael Bay adjacent.
Yeah.
And they're always lacking because some people have big ideas, but most people don't know how to shoot those the way
yes.
Michael Bay does. Like,
yeah.
there was I Hurricane Heist. There was what was the one with O'Shea Jackson when not Clive.
Oh, Owens, yeah, yeah,
the other guy, the bad Clive Owens. Who's the bad?
Wait, who's the bad Clive Owen?
Gerard Butler. Is that one called
Den of Thieves?
Den of Thieves is like a bad Michael yeah. Bay, and like they
I really like that
kind
movie.
It's not bad. It's like, because again, this is my genre, right? Like yes. like
so you love this shit.
Yeah. And that's why I like Two-Hands so much. But like I love
that makes sense.
I love a practical. Heist thing.
I
love a heist, and I really love a heist that is like point blank, you know, point breaky, right?
Sure,
like
sure.
smash and grab, like people in, you know, in sure. the moment, shot like handheld cameras, that type shit. But I think Michael Bay and the director and the writer Chris Fedak really seem to find something that works in 2022. Like I feel pretty good about like The Lost City doing well. I feel pretty good about like, I think Ambulance is like kind of captured people's imaginations to some extent. And these are the kind of movies that I hope and pray for because they're straight up the kind of movies I want to write. Are.
I'm yeah. thrilled. I agree with you 100% that it's great to see Lost City doing well. Original ideas from, you know what I mean? From big Hollywood movie star types.
Big stars putting their yeah. their yeah. stamp on this. It's yeah. it's just cool.
I also yeah. I sent you a YouTube clip a few days ago, and I don't know if you've seen this as well, Jason, but they put out a brief sort of behind the scenes of the drone photography that they did for Ambulance. And generally speaking, I'm not the biggest fan of drone photography when they're trying to mimic what used to be those chopper shots, because there's an artificiality that you can sense in the drone photography. Whereas this is just Michael Bay going like fucking whole hog. And like, he's got this guy wearing these VR glasses and he's literally like flying these fucking drones through these crazy, like to me, that's great drone shit. When you're not, you know what I mean? When you're not trying to emulate yes. something else.
Yeah. There is a, and I think you're alluding to this. There is an uncanny valley that you feel with yep. With most drone shots.
Yep.
But we're going to get past it. Like we yep. got past that with, you know, human rendering and 3D animation.
Yeah.
It's going to happen we're going to love it at some point. But I agree, for the last like 10 years, most drone shots feel like, you know,
yeah.
you know, go back to like, the Discovery Channel, you know, like
no, 100% for sure. Well, like, it's like, you know,
if there are certain things, you know, that like, I think the Discovery Channel, I also think like in the wake of Making a Murderer, like there was a lot of that, like mm-hmm. drone photography stuff that makes me feel like that's where it belongs.
Well, a Netflix place where those are a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are yeah. cool establishing shots. They're cheap and like, I can handle it there, but like, there is no beauty in that.
No.
Like there's no, I mean, having well, just watched the fucking opening of The Shining,
Oh, well, it's, there's also like,
you want to be on the helicopter.
It's also there's slight imperfections in it, which is the fucking key to it, right? Yeah. Like, I don't want to see. And listen, I'm the biggest David Fincher fan in the world, and there is a surgical precision to the way that he makes his films that I absolutely adore. And he's riding that edge, and that's his thing, right? Where trying to sort of find the humanity and the beauty in his films, but I love the fact that you bring up The Shining. It's a perfect example. I love that there's weird little jostles. There's, you know what I mean? That there's just things that you can't iron out that I love. I mean, Deakins has talked a lot about this. He uses a fair amount of, you know, there's some beautiful chopper shots in Shawshank Redemption and in various films that he's done. And they're just beautifully done. And yet there's just a little something there that feels human. that feels kind of messy. So yeah, but listen, Ambulance is going to be great. This movie was a fucking blast. We honestly can't thank you enough, Jason, for coming on to talk about this. I hope to be back on your podcast. We hope to have you back on here.
I love your podcast.
Talk about something else in the future.
What are we doing next? Is that a Pirates hat you got on there?
It is, yep.
Nice.
I'm unfortunately a Pittsburgh Pirates fan.
I was going to say, doesn't seem like that's played out well for you.
There have been nice moments.
Yeah, there's been like three nice moments in 25 years.
Get Andrew McCutcheon for a minute.
Have they won the World Series?
In 79 was the last World Series they won. They have quite a few, but all before I was born.
Some famous ones. 79 was a bunch of, crack addicts and...
LSD. LSD
no-hitter. Doc Ellis. That's a great story. And then
you guys have a great logo, great mascot. Logo. I mean, Pirates is a great fucking... It's great. Yeah. It's awesome.
It's a great history, the Pirates. and then in 60, you had a walk-off. So that's exciting. Yeah. You had Barry Bonds' years that weren't steroid-tainted. You live in San Francisco, the San Francisco area now, right?
I do. I've really always lived in California, but when I started watching sports, nobody in my family was into sports. So I would watch with the kid down the street. His family was all from Pittsburgh, so they were Pittsburgh everything. So they just became my own Pittsburgh team.
Are you all you're Steelers?
Yep. Ooh, Steelers, well, Penguins,
that
Pirates.
That worked out better for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those two are basketball. Did you take on the Warriors?
No, I'm actually a Sixers fan, which is unrelated to the state of Pennsylvania, but more related to Iverson when I was getting into basketball, because Iverson was like...
I think it's really interesting because I do feel like California sports teams, and I don't know if this is just a California thing, Kenny, and obviously I'm not a sports guy to the same degree that you guys are, but does it not feel like there's a little bit of kind of a shrug from California fans? Like that they're just not as invested in all sports as the East Coast fans are?
I don't think they would say that.
Yeah, really? It's for certain teams maybe, but like the Sacramento Kings, probably not as hardcore a fan base as the Warriors, for example. But I mean, there are some great fan bases. The Dodgers,
I don't
for example.
Know. Like the Sacramento,
but like the Angels?
Yeah, I think the Angels are pretty great fans. I think the Angels of Anaheim, I think they like, it's I think in the almost, I guess now almost 20 years I've been here, I think it's gotten stronger. I think that I think people have held on tighter. I think also, no shade, I think coming from Canada, having
I see where
been,
this is going.
No, it's not anywhere. Having been to NHL games in Canada, mm-hmm. it's a different world. Like almost everything looks like it's not real fandom compared to NHL games in Canada. Like
that's fair.
It's crazy to me. Like the way that's why it's so sad that Canadian teams can't win the cup anymore, because people in Canada actually give a shit.
I know.
And then it's like Tampa Bay's winning and they can barely sell out. So I think that
Vegas.
NHL, some NFL sport, some NFL franchise rival Canadian, NHL teams.
Yes,
and
yes.
Some sport, throughout the country, there are some that kind of come close. But to me, like nothing. I where have I been? I've been to Montreal and I've been to Vancouver. And both of those fan bases are ravenous.
Yeah. You're not wrong. I guess I was just sort of tapping into the fact that, like, the Dodgers have won the World Series recently.
But a bad World Series.
The Rams
a fanless World Series.
Right. Okay, sure. And then the Rams just win the Super Bowl.
And they're also recently
you wouldn't
transplanted.
Know it. You wouldn't but know you, it. Would, you wouldn't know it.
You wouldn't know it. I think, and the Lakers won and it didn't make a big deal.
The Kings obviously won the Cup a bunch of times. No one gives
like
a shit.
Deal. I think Yeah, I do think that if the Dodgers had won this year, like there was a buzz this year about the Dodgers that wasn't really present during the pandemic. And I think it would have been a bigger deal. I think that just, in general, like LA fans aren't really going to get on board with the Rams or the Chargers, like in mass. It's something we're kind of figuring out, you know, and it might be 20 years before you really start to buy that.
So are the Raiders? Real. Is that the LA team?
No. The Raiders were LA, then Oakland, now Vegas. But their fan base, I think, now is mostly in Oakland.
Raiders fans are basically, you know, recent parolees, I think, just all over the country. generally who roots for that. But I think that, you know, in general, just in terms of LA sports, I do think LA sports fans get a bit of a bad rap. I think the fact that their NFL teams are both pretty good and they can't really get people excited hurts them. But as Jason said, these teams have only been here 3 years. I think the Dodgers and the Angels have really strong fan bases. I think the Lakers have really strong fan bases. I think the Clippers have like kind of a secretly strong fan base now.
Yep.
And I do think if you go to Kings games, they're kind of exciting too. I mean,
the Clippers came close. The Clippers were competitive.
I think if the Clippers won or something, it would be kind of exciting too. But yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the 100-year legacy that the Red Sox have or the 100-year legacy that the Yankees are, you know, the Giants, for instance, just my Giants, the New York Giants.
But
there is like this, there is this Giants fans are often called gentlemen. Like there's a gentlemanly thing about the Giants that's kind of nice too.
Amazing.
You know, as opposed to their you know, firemen neighbors who are all Jets fans.
This has been our episode on Twin Dragons and the LA sports teams. It's been great.
But what are we going to do next week?
That is a very good question. Next week, let me just pull up this thing. My apologies for not having this at the ready. Next week, I think, honestly, Eye of the Beholder?
Oh, Eye of the Beholder.
Have you seen Eye of the Beholder?
The look on Jason's face makes me think it hasn't made any Force 5 lists.
It hasn't, but I think I know the movie you're talking about. And if it's the movie I'm thinking of, it is wild. You're gonna have a great time with it. You're gonna have a great time with that.
We had the Screen Drafts guys. We had Clay Keller, Ryan Marker on to talk about the Ewan McGregor, Ashley Judd spy thriller. I mean, how would you describe it, Kenny? Is it a spy thriller? It's sort of a serial killer movie, kind of.
It was brought to my attention as a serial killer movie, but it's not really a serial killer movie. It's kind of somewhere. It lives a little bit between spy and serial killer, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's a giant fucking mess. Katie Lang plays the spy handler. It's a lot.
It's not the spy trying to capture the serial killer. It's a spy movie and a serial killer movie, but it is not about like, you know,
either of those
it's not. It's a weird movie. One of the Screen Drafts guys defends it. The other one
helping,
is, you know,
a serial killer.
I don't give too much away. Listen to the episode.
It's a lot.
Ryan,
you guys will
play
love
together
it.
Is very exciting for us.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's awesome to have them. Jason, tell our audience about your podcast. So where they can listen to it, what it's about.
I'll keep it short. Keep it short because I know you got to get out of here, Kenny. Yeah. It's just top five lists every week, different guests. We do a different top five list and it's always chosen by the guest. So if you want a good starting point on Force 5, pick Kenny or Phil's shows. Phil did top five movies about writing, Kenny top five twins. So we go into the show blind. We don't know the picks that the other person came up with. So sometimes there's crossover, sometimes they're not. But I guarantee you go on to the either draft with these guys and there's going to be some movies that you've probably never heard about.
I gotta say,
some really strong. I'm looking at your list right now, or the episodes you've done kind of recently. There's some really, really strong, strong
guests
lists
and subjects.
On here.
Yeah.
Well, great guests. I mean, we just had Jason Bailey on. I see you have him doing top five New York exploitation films with him. He's great. That's fun. But just really, really like cool little sub genres that you always explore. So looking forward.
I also gotta say too.
I'm looking forward to reading to listen to watching some.
I feel like Kenny and I were chatting about this, but you'll never really guess what Jason's picks are going to be. Like, and I mean that in the best possible way. Like, I was kind of expecting that you and I would have some crossover, and we didn't cross over at all, really. I mean, I think outside of our number ones were probably the same. Yeah. But outside of that, it was very different. And I think, Kenny, yours were pretty different as well.
Yeah, my sense is Jason takes his number one seriously, and then the rest of them, he is just trying to...
a wild man.
He's trying to zag, where another guy might zig. I'm not sure, because his number one is... Is, you know, that's a straight up movie, but I love that about you, and I love that about the podcast.
Similar background to Phil, in that I also grew up in the video store realm when I first started working. So it was, you know, take every movie home and watch every movie so you could recommend stuff. And, you know, that's where my tastes come from. I like a lot of stuff that other people would consider garbage. I love it.
I'm going to listen to this top five Hawaii films now, because I have a strong opinion on what should be one.
So. And people can find your podcast where they can find podcasts, right? Anywhere.
Yep. Force Five Podcast.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Jason. This was a blast. We can't wait to have you back to talk about, you know, Pittsburgh teams and movies. So,
thank you so much. Pittsburgh movie with those. Yeah, of course. It might be a Pittsburgh movie.
What is the quintessential Pittsburgh movie? Is there, I mean, Wonder Boys is a Pittsburgh movie. Pittsburgh.
That's a great one.
The only other one that comes to mind is, do you guys remember the movie Striking Distance? The Bruce Willis movie?
Bruce Willis,
A Pittsburgh movie.
The best Pittsburgh movie, and Phil, you'll agree with me as soon as I say it. Jason, I know you already agree with me. Sudden Death.
Of course. It takes place in the Penguins.
Yeah, so it's a spectacular, perfect film. And it's such a Pittsburghy film.
There's two movies really that show off Pittsburgh stadiums. One's The Dark Knight Rises, which is not a good movie, but a great scene. And the other is Sudden Death, which is a fantastic movie. And if you want to see Van Damme fight the Penguins mascot, you can't get better than that.
And kind of get his ass kicked by the Penguins.
Oh, totally get his ass kicked.
It's wonderful. There's the movie I think of when I think of Pittsburgh, because there Pittsburgh. All right, so, and again, I have to go, but I'm not going to go just yet. Project Greenlight, the one where they did two films, got great tax incentives from Pittsburgh. So both of those movies were shot in Pittsburgh. That's not what I'm talking about, but it made me think that Pittsburgh is, you see Pittsburgh in a lot more movies than you'd expect. For instance, Phil, we saw it in Inspector Gadget.
We did.
Which was shot in Pittsburgh and around the famous Yellow Bridge. I think it's the Roberto Clemente Bridge. The one I remember, which, and it's always weird because, you know, Pittsburgh, like, you know, it's not a place you fall in love. What was the movie? God, I should know the answer to this. What was the movie that had Jay Baruchel and Alice Eve where
she's out of my league.
She's out of my league. Was shot in Pittsburgh. And I remember thinking, you know, like, you didn't have to get like Alice Eve, like, you know, Kristen Ritter is in it. I'm sure she's a Pittsburgh 10. You know?
Shout out to the Pittsburgh listeners.
Jay Baruchel.
This has become a deep dive into all things Pittsburgh, and I love it. Can we just talk about the name Pittsburgh?
True. I mean,
Jason, I assume you've been there. You've done a pilgrimage.
Yes, of course. I actually moved to Pennsylvania for a couple of years and went to Pittsburgh for a bit. But we can't talk about Pittsburgh movies without mentioning the Night of the Living Dead movies. Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead. I mean, for best Pittsburgh movies, those got to be it.
I watched, what's the second one? Dawn of the Dead? The mall one?
Yeah, Dawn of the Dead. Yeah,
I watched that fairly recently, and I don't remember any Pittsburgh in that.
Yeah, all Pittsburgh stuff.
That's Romero fantastic. Made.
Yeah,
this was great. We will we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.